You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to my Opie Defend Your Childhood. This week, I'm speaking into a new microphone, and hopefully I'm fixing some of the issues from last week's episode. We are on episode 201, which means we're back in, I don't even know what to say. I am just tickled pink that you guys are still listening to me after 201 movies and some 230 regular episodes, and, well, let's get into it. This week we watched a JCVD action movie, and at the behest of you guys chose this month, of course. We are doing Hunting Humans for Sport, and you guys didn't know the movies. We gave you the category. This is the category you chose. So we chose 1992 John Woo movie, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, and it kicked ass, man. I mean, we haven't done much I don't think we've done any Jean-Claude Van Damme, actually. And he is just in peak physical Belgian form, which, I mean, you can imagine that's, of course, as a Belgian myself, what I look like constantly. With this in mind, of course, next week we will, or 2 weeks, hell, we will also do a Hunting Humans for Sport movie. And like I tease in this episode, next month we're doing the heavy hitters of horror, so to speak. And of those heavy hitters of horror, we have decided to do the first movie of their series. We decided that Halloween was too good to be a part of this, so we're going to start with two movies, Friday the 13th and A Nightmare on Elm Street. And we're going to let you choose the third one since there are five Thursdays in October. Follow us on Twitter, honestly, at my podcast, of course. Because we're doing, for the last few, actually at this point over a week, we're doing an action movie bracket where you can pick your favorite action stars. Not movies particularly, but action stars. And, you know, it's fun. I mean, in the first, whatever we're up to, 8 days, we've had over 1,600 votes. And, you know, so I appreciate my fans, but we're just having a little fun and... of all things, we've had some of the actors we've been responding to, or rather putting in brackets, respond to our brackets. Michael Dudikoff among them. And we've had some other messages here and there. So, you know, participate, guys. It's really fantastic. So, I guess with that in mind, we're members of ESO Network, follow them. And we've had some messages from the Patreon, you know, so ESO Patreon, and we've had followers on Letterboxd. I think I have, you know, a couple thousand Letterboxd followers, and of course our 10,000 Twitter fans and our Facebook fans. Like, I really appreciate you guys and your 60, you know, Apple reviews. So please keep supporting us, and we'll keep giving you the content you want. And you guys give us good feedback, honestly. So I appreciate it. Thanks.
We are the Cigar Nerds, bringing nerdy sophistication and geeky indulgence on all topics, including movies, video games, science, and pop culture news, all from the Nerd Cave Cigar Lounge. Find us on iTunes, Stitchers, Google Play, and wherever fine podcasts are found, including ESONetwork.com and CigarNerdPodcast.com. So fire up a cigar, it's time to get nerdy.
Welcome to my Opie Defend Your Childhood. This week, we have started your month. This season, we've decided to let you choose the months, and you guys voted overwhelmingly for Hunting Humans for Sport.
Yeah!
And you guys didn't know. I guess you saw the episode title. So we did... Hard Target 1993's John Woo, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Wilford Brimley, Lance Hendrickson. I mean...
Arnold Vosloo, all the greats.
Yeah, welcome back to the podcast, Mr. Vosloo, I guess.
We haven't seen you since you were rising from the dead, eating people's eyeballs.
That's exactly right. And so we did the one of the weirdest hunting for sport movies I've seen. It's awesome. Hard Target. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defender Childhood in its sixth season, and riffer on Cineprob. And on panel we have
Steve-O.
Hello, this is Daniel, and Matt, bad news. I paid somebody $20 to get the opportunity to hunt you after this, so just be on your guard.
$20.
Yep.
$20.
They really pushed that bid down, didn't they?
It was probably one of my students, wasn't it? They didn't like the quiz every week.
Yeah, probably.
That's exactly what it is. And you are?
I'm Matthew W. Quinn, author of the upcoming novella, The Little People, Big Guns, which features a lot of people and animals getting hunted for sport.
Yeah.
Little people and animals.
Great. So before we get a little bit into this, I want to thank you guys for voting on this month. I will tell you, and I'll plug again at the end, assuming Daniel reminds me, we're going to have much more polling just to get you guys involved. At the moment, we're knee-deep in an action movie star bracket to pick your best. So follow us on Twitter at Myopia Podcast. And for October, we're going to do Heavy Hitters of Horror. We've already chosen Jason Voorhees and Freddy Krueger. Since Thursdays appear five times in October, we're going to let you pick the last movie. We have a poll coming up, actually, probably the week the next movie comes out for Hunting for Humans.
I said Heavy Hitters of Horror, so Charlie Sheen movies.
Somebody's going to write in Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, and we're going to have to watch that.
No, we are not. We've chosen four for them.
I'm watching Night of the Living Dead four times and showing up for a podcast.
Steve, well, this is awkward. No. We're talking about Night of the Living Dead.
That's right.
And maybe a crossover, Freddy Krueger meets Night of the Living Dead.
I would love to see someone trying to be serious in a horror film as zombies just tap dance around, like...
Here's That's Night of the Living Dead.
That's Night of the Living Dead.
Freddy Krueger should show up in more dream movies. If What Dreams May Come, you have Robin Williams walking through these beautiful matte paintings and all of a sudden, hello, bitch, and then you end up with... Or in Inception. Freddy Krueger should have been in Inception.
Had Neil Gaiman put Freddy Krueger in The Sandman, that would be an even more legendary book.
So anyway, keep following us on Twitter. It's a way for us to interact with you more because, frankly... Matt, Daniel, and I pick a lot of these movies. Steve and Charlie have helped a lot this season, just like Thomas did last season. And it's fine, but we get in our own little ruts, and it helps to hear from you guys. And even though you're picking the categories, we bicker over these categories at a sports bar near us for a long time. It gives us some... It allows us to have a little bit more freedom.
The things we do for you people.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? They're the ones who listen to us bullshit them.
By the end of those conversations at the sports bar, it usually just devolves into, why is red?
Yeah, why is red? Wait, but do people actually listen? Then I pull up the numbers. I'm like, someone does. In the Czech Republic. Who in the Czech Republic is listening to us?
Vladimir Putin.
The Czech Republic?
Yeah, maybe maybe he's traveled from Russia to run his to check on the command post personally.
Look, this boy knows how to.
Vladimir Putin is listening to our podcast in Prague.
He teaches AP World, guys. He knows where Prague is.
This boy knows how to use a VPN. He's not an idiot.
But yeah, no, thank you. At this point, last time I checked, Our home state of Georgia isn't even in the top 10 states that listen to us. And we have more Canadian listeners and more Australian listeners than we do in big states like Illinois. So I take that every day as a sign that you guys are listening, so I'm giving more credit to you guys to choose our movies for us.
Thank you, Canada.
So Sudsy, why don't you tell us a little bit about this movie?
Oh, yes.
Wait, give me a second. I need a... right there.
Okay, so in 1992, well, for about a decade, in the 80s up until 1992, John Woo was this legendary director in Hong Kong. Like, in 86, I think A Better Tomorrow got the equivalent of the Hong Kong Oscars Best Picture Award. And he turned Chow Yun-fat into a star, which is why he was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and they tried to... bring him into Hollywood, and that didn't really work. But after he put out Hard Boiled, it didn't make as much money in Hong Kong as it did, as his other movies had. But at that point in time, his movies were starting to play in American film festivals, and Quentin Tarantino was really championing him to come on over. And so Hollywood studio took a chance on him. I think Universal put this out. Yeah, I think it was Universal, but... They hired him to come and start directing movies in America. And from there, it was pretty much an extended version of Barton Fink that lasted for another 10 years before John Woo quit and went back to China. Well, it was China proper at that point because the reunification had happened. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I think the last thing John Woo did was this Netflix, well, in the U.S. it was like a direct-to-Netflix movie called Manhunt, which was, eh, maybe, I don't know.
Does this involve hunting humans for sport?
No, it doesn't.
Which is weird for a movie called Manhunt.
Yes.
It looks like episode we thought about doing but didn't, The Fugitive? More like that?
Kind of. I've only ever seen it once, and it was kind of just, eh, plot. Who needs a plot? We can get people to shoot guns at each other.
Well, thank you for the background, Sudsy. Matt, would you like to tell us the plot of this movie?
Okay. Basically,
on John. Oh, I can.
So yeah. Basically, it's in New Orleans in the early 90s, and some evil rich people led by Bishop the Robot.
Bishop the Android, sir.
Lance Hendrickson. Are basically to give homeless people $10,000. They can make it 10 miles across the conveniently deserted city. They can keep it. If they don't, they die. And so this man who's like a Vietnam vet is, at the beginning, is hunted down and killed by dudes on motorcycles. And it turns out he's not as alone in the world as he thought. He has a daughter who comes looking for him. And she's not very wise about going being the bad part of New Orleans. And Jean-Claude Van Damme happens to save her from some the world's poorest muggers who mug her because she has like 10 bucks. And she hires him so he can pay off his union back dues, get a job on a ship.
Hey, 10 bucks back in the 90s would get you a car.
Well, 10 bucks in a sweet Corvette. Like, so, let's be real. Their priorities were straight.
So they're trying to investigate her dad's death. And meanwhile, Lance Hendrickson and his minions, including an early 90s evil South African Arnold Vosloo, because, are trying to avoid getting found out. And the hunt is on.
Also, you forgot how Mr. Chance Boudreau fits into this.
They said he needs his union dues.
Yeah. He needs his union dues, but I mean,
that's the real plot. He needs $217.
Yeah, so he can ship out and work as a...
Are you a bad enough dude to acquire $217? Start fighting.
Oh, no, you're just saying this is the Big Lebowski. All he wants is his rug back.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Instead of what would you do for a Klondike bar is... What would you do for $217?
Anything. Literally anything.
Oh my, Steve. I didn't know that about you.
Right?
Well, okay. So I guess we need to start about this movie. The cold open is a bunch of men with bow and arrows hunting down Zach Galifianakis.
Who's got dark hair. I always thought he was a redhead.
Oh no, this guy has the same brown fuzzy hair and bushy beard that Zach... I mean, he looks like the purple couch stand-up or whatever.
Well, that's why he's murdered literally between two ferns.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, there you go.
No, he's murdered in, what was it, a graveyard? No, it was on a dock.
He was on a dock.
Yeah, because he was...
He was torn to shreds by these bladed... Well, you know what it is? Honestly, it looks like the arrows from Rambo.
Yeah.
Yeah, like these are are what happens after you've leveled to the second level and you get the upgraded bow and arrow set.
Yeah, there you go.
They're so strong that they punch through his dog tag and leave a diamond cut into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this isn't quite a harpoon gun, but we're almost there.
We'll get there.
Well, after that cold open, the movie begins proper with the credits, I guess. And then I think we get a Yancey Butler, who's his daughter, coming down.
Yeah.
Yancey Butler from Witchblade?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
This is well done. He pulled that out of somewhere. I've never seen a minute of Witchblade.
Something tells me it's not very good.
Have you not seen it?
I think I might have seen little bits and bobs when it was on TV.
That was on TV?
I mean, it's fair. I'm asking questions because... You say Witchblade.
I think I know that she's...
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time. We're introduced to JCVD from the mullet up.
Oh, no, it's a close-up on his eyes first.
No, the camera comes behind him, and then it's like, my goodness, who's behind this mullet? And then we get an eye shot like, well, the bad guy's name is Van Cleef. It's a good, the bad, and the ugly shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's at this diner, and he's not paying for his food like he's supposed to.
Yeah, he has enough loose change...
To pay for the coffee.
And to explain how steel beams are melted. I realize I said loose change, and I can't think of anything else when I said...
Your fool can't melt steel!
Yeah. And the woman gives him a rough time because, you know, he is paying barely for the coffee, let alone for his whatever
gumbo.
Gumbo, thank you.
Well, it was a tragedy, which is what why he didn't pay for it, I guess.
I'm sure. That's what he says, whatever. And then he notices a pair of eyebrows walking through the bar who's trying to make a call.
And she's flashing around a lot of money to make change, to make a call. And something, kiddos, used to be called a payphone.
God, you know what? That really did occur to me. I even asked this during the movie. I'm like, she's got a $10 bill and 10 ones. What the hell could she need? She needs nickels. This is the 90s.
And also, that's enough money to mug her. The idea that she has $25 in cash. She's
and plus. A sweet Corvette.
And yeah.
Come on.
It's only got the one dent in it, so...
Hey, she's got a great rack and a Corvette. Let's go rough her up or whatever.
Yeah, four guys who clearly have nothing better to do.
She drove from Detroit to New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Michigan place that they keep zooming in on. My goodness, this movie.
So the four lowlives rob her. It looks like they're about to do worse when Jean-Claude Van Damme shows up.
Is it really just four? Because, like, yeah. 10 dudes show up.
Well, I bet those guys are getting back up again.
Okay.
Because if you don't hit them hard enough in the head, they tend to do that.
Well, let's be fair. This scene is just to set up that Jean-Claude Van Damme can
kick things.
Can twirl so well. And frankly, I imagine... So Danny Boy brought up earlier when we were watching this and we were talking about it. This movie was 2 hours and change long. 2.5?
There's a bootleg work print that's going around. I have no idea where you can get it. I've just heard about it. That's like 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, the story goes that JCVD said, I do not make movies that long. And so he locked him. He kicked Wu out, locked himself into the editing bay, and there's this movie, which is kind of a pristine 95 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been shorter if they had so many bizarre artistic cuts and slow-mos. And
you shut your goddamn mouth.
I was going to say, but that... And to Matt's point, 80% shorter if you get rid of the slow-mo. This movie is all slow motion. He opens the door in slow motion.
Everything is slow motion.
His hair, but it's because...
His mullet weaves in slow motion.
That mullet is so greasly.
It was such a flavor of the month technique. Like, you felt like, oh my God, it's being overused, and it just kept coming. It was lovely.
Thank you. Well, and I'm going to disagree with Daniel for 2 seconds because his.
Can you do that in slow mo, please?
Because if they really wanted to underspeed the film, they would have used a high speed camera.
Yeah.
In this case, you can clearly tell that in the editing bay, JCVD was like, but what if you could almost see my balls drop in this kick? And so he slowed it down even more because that is not really well done. It's not like those Bond movies we watched forever and a day ago when they had a camera designed just for that.
Yeah.
This looked really, really shitty.
All right, so, I mean, that's just what he was doing back in Hong Kong, and so it made sense, and, I mean, that technique's borrowed from Sam Peckinpah anyway, so...
Oh, I mean...
He was at least 30 years old at this point.
This introduced us to a note that I just have called Sad Cake. So...
Sad Cake.
So what's her name?
Yancy Butler.
Her last name was Bender because that was her dad's last name. We don't get her. What was her
eyebrows.
Name?
Eyebrows. I just kept referring to her as
Natasha.
Eyebrows.
She was Nat. They called her Nat.
And so she shows up at the. Apparently, all of New Orleans police are on strike. And here's the thing, New Orleans, they remind us, is a city of 2 million people. If the police go on strike, the National Guard is coming in. Someone is protecting the city, but apparently no one is because there's also no one on the street.
They were right. They said no cops. What was the strike phrase?
No cops, the city strike stops or something.
No cops, the city stops. Yeah. And they were absolutely right. There was no one anywhere.
It was basically like RoboCop, except they were playing it for realsies.
It was.
It's an Antifa slogan. No cops, the city stops.
Like, there you go.
You... Color pull. But Yancy Butler still tries to get the cops to care about her missing father. And there's just
one cop still on duty.
One detective shows up on her birthday. And here's the thing. We all have to work on our birthday. My birthday is August 20th. I mean, no one sent me anything. Fuck you, listeners. which always corresponds with the beginning of school. And you guys know I'm a teacher. is I go to work because it's like the third day of school every year. Like, what am I going to do? I'm not going to take off. But you know what? If the cops are on strike and you're a cop, don't show up on your birthday. But she has a sad cake. It is a personal pan pizza of a cake with a candle lit, which is, as though she's about to cut her wrists at the end of it.
Which she stuffs in a file drawer and it accidentally sets a bunch of things on fire.
She doesn't set anything on fire. That's
smoking
just
coming out.
Well, because the candle was in there.
But I mean, like, Yancey Butler is literally about to burn through evidence, as Matt said.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to, I mean, this is like the saddest thing.
What was that line about when they're trying to describe her dad and she's like, well, missing.
I'm going to correct you here. It's her daddy.
Oh, her
dad. And I'm sorry.
No. It is, in fact, her papa.
Well, her daddy.
JCVD tries to fix her. She keeps saying daddy's like your papa. No. My daddy. I'm sorry. A woman her age should not be saying daddy anymore. It's
unless
weird.
You're Ivanka.
It got more
don't
weird.
Don't give her ideas.
Oh, she's had that
idea. Or give him ideas.
Anyway, moving on. So Daddy Trump is in the office. Now, she says, we can't do anything because he was homeless and you have to be missing from a place.
Somewhere, yeah. In order to be considered missing.
And you need to know where the hell he was or where the hell he is to do things in the 90s.
Have you tried the missions, which she's already done?
Yeah.
We gave up on poor people a long time ago. Have you tried the Catholics? And because that's the joke they make later. It's like,
yeah.
You listen to 30 minutes of a sermon, you get a bowl of soup.
Now, who is the other former Special Forces person that she eventually does meet at a mission?
The Army Ranger.
The black guy who has to die because he's the only black person in the film.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor
Great
Willie.
Great character, though.
I love him. And again, we said he... I mean, I thought he's not Danny Glover, but he has this Danny Glover, like, I'm too old for this shit. Like, at one point, Lance Henderson goes... Or no, Poe, fat guy Poe goes, you want $100 for filling out a form? And he goes, I don't need your money. Yeah, I need your money. It's sad. This is an indictment. This whole movie's an indictment of how we treat our veterans. Because everyone who gets killed for sport is a vet. Even JCVD, I was an American soldier. Sure you were, buddy. Sure you. I've never been more convinced of stolen valor than JCVD saying he was an American soldier.
So it turns out he was a Belgian soldier.
Okay. Yeah. My dad was a Belgian soldier. His military duty was playing golf with the general. That's honest to God true. I'll tell you sometime. So at this point, we smash cut to a union.
They're loading up a cargo ship that's going to be shipped out of the port.
Yeah, and JCVD used to be a longshoreman. He hasn't paid his dues, so he can't work.
Well, he hasn't had the money to pay his dues.
Right, I mean, it's homelessness. Again, well, he's a veteran.
It's
with
the Reagan
star.
Idea about what unions do. It's like, well, mommy, they can't work because they can't pay their dues, and they can't pay their dues unless they work.
Yeah, exactly. People are getting called away. He's the very last name, Chance Boudreau.
Yep.
And this is when, well, Blondie. This is when Eyebrows shows back up.
Yep.
Yancey Brown.
Yancey Butler.
Yancey Brown. Yancey Brown is the voice of Mr. Krabs. We went over this earlier.
Yes, we did.
And that's Clancy Brown, too. Not
there can be only one, Nick. Brown. There can be only one.
Yarr! Jean-Claude Van Damme, will you work in my burger shop?
I'm so surprised of this.
He sidekicks Plankton and he makes him explode.
Oh my god! If JCVD kicked Plankton through the wall, a good spin kick would have saved everything.
I don't know. I'm just surprised Mr. Krabs never put a knife through a Plankton's hand and then just yelled out, "Medic!"
Anyway, at this point, Natasha picks him up to help him look for her daddy.
By the way, the whole thing about the union dues, completely forgotten after one scene. We never see her give him any money. We never hear him worry about whether or not he's going to miss the ship.
It's so 90s. This is what starts our plot. There's no motivation otherwise. He needs
$100
he needs
day.
$217 ASAP. Like,
and he can't get
go. Go. Start the movie. We got motivation now.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, you guys are right. It needed one more line. It's just like... you know, here, take a check. I'll pay you like I have all the payment I need. And then they just kiss, right? Well, the movie ends with the world on fire, and they're just like, Uncle Duvet, can you stand? I'll be fine.
Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, that'd be a time to bring it up, you know. It's like, well, the boat hasn't left yet.
But that's just it. I've written your last line. Matt gave it to me. Aren't you going to miss your boat? I'm not missing anything. And then they just
there you go.
Credits.
Oh. Da, 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 no, no, no. Because that was the thing John Woo avoided, was the Bond ending.
This isn't his movie anymore. This is JCVD in the studio. He could have voiced it himself. Oh, I am so in love with you, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Oh, yes, I am in love with you too. Smoochy, smoochy.
Because he did a spin kick and kicked John Woo out of the editing booth.
Oh, my God. How great would that be? Okay. You've done movies before.
This was always John Woo. It always was. And you can tell just the sheer confusion of these scenes.
And so many explosions.
As he's yelling and pointing maniacally, and people are just like, I don't know, just get over there. Slow-mo this now. Get in there.
You're right. This is a scene from Batman 1989. Like, he's putting together a movie. Jean-Claude Van Damme's yelling at the editor. He's like, what did you do? What did you do? These tools. This is all I had. And he just looks at the movie and goes, and then this is the movie.
Pointing frantically at the trunk. Get on there!
Oh, we haven't even gotten to the guy with the kidnapping trunk yet.
The fat guy who pays homeless people to pass out porno stuff for him.
Oh, yeah, it's stripper flyers. It's all it is. It's an old Times Square joke, effectively. But then Rudy Giuliani kicked out all the whores.
I did love the greasy nature of this film. There's so many just grease balls. Like,
for a movie in 1994, this is like a mid-1980s where everyone's sweating. Wedding from the cocaine kind of...
It was. Yeah. They got three buttons undid and a gold chain, and it's all greasy and grimy and awesome.
Even the rotund gentleman,
Fat Guy Poe, when he's making a break for it before Waslu shoots his, like, brain out of his skull.
Yeah.
He's just sweaty running like he has, like, a seersucker on.
Yeah.
He has a wide collar out of the wrong era.
And the guy would have escaped, too, if we didn't keep stopping all the time.
If it wasn't for those pesky kids and that dog.
The pesky girl from Detroit and her attack dog Belgian.
Yeah, those Belgian mastiffs are the worst. Yeah, well, speaking of, we can get through this.
Rut-row, and they swing kicks.
Well, after that bit, there's the scene with Jean-Claude Van Damme going to where they found the dad's body, because they eventually do find it, and they say, oh, he burned to death in a building in the Ninth Ward, which this was pre-Katrina, but now that carries more significance. But
my brother went to Loyola. He was right there when it hit.
Yeah.
And he finds the dog tags, and two thug guys is coming as whale on him.
Oh, tell your girlfriend to make her tits point north and go there? What was the line?
The
strangest threats.
Okay, so...
And he delivers them in this really strange tone.
So there are two credits on IMDb for Frick and Frack. Were these those knuckleheads?
I'm sure they were.
They never name-dropped these guys, but it must have been them.
Yeah, we do see them now several times later during the Unlimited Minion Kill Fest.
It was just the coked-out, like, Mad Max biker guys that deliver the greatest line of this film.
Well, I mean, and Daniel, I'm not going to back up for 1 second, only to say that JCVD grabs the medical file, recognizes some stuff in it. The black guy we talked about says, well, he has this file, and in the file he finds the stripper flyers that you mentioned,
right?
Matt, and they go to visit the stripper guy.
Well, he's getting a massage.
Poe.
Yeah, Poe.
No, this is before.
Yeah.
And, he says, oh, they were looking for whoever's killed in the first scene.
Who's Binder.
Binder. Doug Binder.
Yeah. Douglas Binder. Yep.
And Vosloo and Lance Hendrickson rough him up. And they cut off part of his ear.
They cut his lobe right off.
Watch. They pulled that off well.
Well, I mean, it's a Tarantino scene where they cut the ear off and everything.
But stuck in the middle with you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then Vosloo washes his hands off in the fishbowl.
He sticks his hand in the fishbowl to get the blood off.
And Vosloo goes back and goes, next time I'm coming back, I'm cutting off a steak.
Yeah.
I wrote that down. I was And then when we go to the scene and we JCVD finds the dog tag that has literally a bow and arrow hole through it, he goes, man, you gotta get out of town and tell that girlfriend of yours to point her titties to the north and slip on the gas.
Oh, that's what the line was. Yes. Yes.
That is the strangest line I've heard in a while. I've
that
seen a
is
lot of-
what a moleskin is for, my friends.
And in 30 minutes into the film, you knew this was going to be the best line, and goddamn it was.
That nails it. I if the movie had stopped there, I'd have been like, TNT, you fucked up. But that was the best 25 minutes of a movie I've seen. And point to the movie's credit, it's like 95 minutes.
And then So he gets arrested for messing with the crime scene, is taken to the lady detective, who then he reveals that he's got the dog tag, and that gets her going.
Well, because apparently one of the coroners is in Lance Henriksen's pocket, and then the detective says she's going to try and open up an inquest unless he reperforms the autopsy, which both leads to a subplot where, A, they're trying to kill the loose ends, and B, it actually shows another what a full hunt looks like in New Orleans.
And at one point features a corrupt doctor getting shot through the eyeball through the door.
Right through the peephole, yeah.
Peephole, yeah, that's what
that
it's
was.
Called.
That was such a Dario Argento scene.
Almost a Hitchcock, where you have the eyeball versus the eyeball.
Like I said, a Dario Argento scene.
It was a weird turning point, though, because the doctor's job was to cover up these murders and be the guy doing the autopsies, and then they shoot him in the face through a peephole, and they just leave the house.
Who can keep a secret if one of them's dead?
Yeah, right? Like, we went from covering our tracks to, fuck it, we're shooting guys through doors now. This is what this movie is.
Well, that's kind of how the movie works.
I just heard it from Dexter.
Yeah.
In like, the first act, it's kind of trying to be grounded, like maybe JCVD kicks those thugs in a kickboxer manner, but they're still trying to pretend like he's a homeless guy in New Orleans. After that second hunt where that black character's running through the city, that's all gone. Any foundation reality
gone. They just machine gun him in front of like 20 people.
Also, you know, screw them, man. They're cheating at the game. They're supposed to be like, man, you can get to freedom. No, you have motorcycle guys kicking him in the head.
Yeah. They do get a 5-minute head start.
Do you get a partial refund if you've paid to murder a man and you've just got douchebags on dirt bikes kicking your guy?
Well, they're supposed to be trackers.
I want to help this guy. Stop kicking him, you assholes.
Trackers. They're supposed to keep... like that, like human dogs.
The tracker's just
dogs.
Kicking him in the legs.
Well, I mean, to Steve's point, the problem is they got some new money here. The guy doesn't want to shoot the guy.
Yeah, this guy sucked. This guy's a noob.
Then the guy,
Rupert Murdoch, would have finished the job.
Give credit where credit's due, that one actor I keep referring to is Willie Carpenter, and his character was Elijah Roper.
Oh, Eli.
Eli, yes.
And he's good.
He's real good.
Also, he can speak without an accent, which JCVD is
good. I have a feeling that's why they said it in New Orleans, was just to explain the accent.
And then you have his uncle, Duvet.
Which we haven't gotten to.
Oh, God.
Hold on to your hats for some diabetes.
could they have had Jean-Claude instead fake a Southern accent? Like, what would have been more awkward?
There was this.
Can you imagine this?
Like in the 1988 Godzilla, where it's got that French actor pretending to be Elvis.
I would have laughed my ass off because Wilford Brimley's French accent was just painful.
God,
yeah.
Oh, you know who should have played his older uncle? Gerard Depardieu. Cooked an entire gator right now in my stew. You're just like, yeah. You fat old man. But this is 94. He was still kind of... He was a good-looking man. This is my father, the hero. Ew.
Yeah. These days, no.
Well, he pretty much could eat anyone. He's the blob man. Didn't he take a... Did he piss on a plane?
That wouldn't surprise me.
I guess something about that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't know. I love the man. I showed Danton when I teach AP World. I've showed The Return of Martin Guerre, like, and he's a snack in that movie, I swear to God. But at this point, he's just like, you know what France does to you? Makes you fat and happy. And you know what? You can stay, as a French actor, he's coasting. He's good. Let's move on to people who die. So,
basically,
open the old billboard.
What was his name? Roper gets the drop on the guys hunting him and kills a couple of them.
Yeah.
And then he runs out into Bourbon Street and no one is willing to help him.
Not even Ted Raimi.
Oh,
and he gets shot in front of like 100 plus people.
Danny Boy, tell us about Ted Raimi.
Well, first, if you watch the credits, you'll see that Renaissance is one of the producers of this, and that's Renaissance Pictures, the people that did Army of Darkness. And Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert are two of the producers. The reason is because John Woo didn't speak much English at this point. So the producers are basically like, okay, this Tarantino guy really wants us to bring Woo into the States, but just in case this doesn't work out, we're going to hire another director who can actually take over just in case, and that was Sam Raimi.
Well, and you can tell little Raimi bits here and there because I've seen other Woo. They're not usually bloody. Right, like he likes the violent action, but there's a Raimi kind of bloodiness to bits of this now and again, and that's his production credits. Right, I mean, like,
well, they're not gory, I think, is what you mean. They're plenty bloody, but there's not like an emphasis on like blood spurts.
We've done Face Off.
Yeah,
for where the technology is to cut off someone's face and take the face
off.
There's no blood, right? Yeah. Like it's visceral, but it's not bloody.
Right.
There's blood in this because of like explosions and
Poe getting his head blown off.
And you guys might think, oh, because most of our listeners are younger than we are, which is weird to say out loud. Because I'm a sprightly 30-something, and all of my joints hurt.
Snap, crackle, pop. Something eventually starts to happen to your spine.
Eventually,
thanks, Grandma. But
it happened to that one boy's spine. Jean-Claude Van Damme was sure of that one.
See, he's like a Batman when you play Batman Arkham Asylum. He'll live.
He was a contortionist. You just pushed this guy's torso into another man over the hood of a car. It was fantastic.
Yeah, because at some point, you know, Lance Henriksen has an unlimited number of minions.
Oh, because he becomes, at the end of this movie, effectively like a villain in a video game, where he has like the one automatic weapon and the one handgun weapon, and there's just like shooting and explosions for no reason, and you just have to throw minions at him until you run out of bullets. Yeah, but you have the cheat code.
Oh, yeah, because putties. I figured
he had his four or five guys in his hunting operation, like the trackers and minion types, and Vosloo was just his top muscle guy. All of a sudden, like, carloads and carloads and carloads of them start showing up. No matter how many Jean-Claude Van Damme kills, they just keep coming.
Yeah.
It is. It's one aspect of the film I really do appreciate, though. Like, for a corny, like, action film, I do love those over-the-top moments of, we're just going to keep throwing henchmen at him until it's not entertaining, and then we're going to break physics until that's not entertaining, and then he's going to swing around on a rope, and barrels are going to levitate when they get shot, because that's how explosions work.
And ram a leaky motorcycle into some minion's truck.
Yeah, and evade every shot, and there's going to be explosions until it's not convenient or entertaining anymore, and then we're going to move on to something more ridiculous.
Yeah, like, let's go into the swamp.
Yeah, well, and let's get us to the swamp just really quickly. Eventually, JCVD and, you know, Yancey end up back at Poe. In fact, Poe is getting a weird Arabic massage. The girl from Araby, like, it's a weird
skeezy. Is that really Salma Hayek?
No, it's not.
No, of course not. We just did Wild Wild West recently, so I was like, she's wearing the same outfit. Regardless, she's giving massage to Poe, who's the fat guy who hands out stripper tickets.
What was that place called? It had something to do like Mistress. I know this isn't right, but something like Mistress Cleo and her special feet.
Oh no, that's what I said.
Watch out, it's Quentin Tarantino.
Woman of Araby and her magic.
Yeah,
feet.
Is Quentin Tarantino skulking around here somewhere?
Right, we're in,
yes, basically.
You foot shot, and Tarantino's just like, jingle, jingle. Like,
Tarantino's like, I'm done.
Yeah, whoever.
I just
PA,
finished.
Yeah, his PA is like, stop filming Pulp Fiction. We've got to show you a movie. It's foot shot after foot shot. Anyway, so midway through the massage, JCVD says, it looks like you're missing an ear, so you'll have to listen carefully. At this point, we get the info that, you know, who it is, Van Cleef, who again, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. That's Vosloo's character. Then Poe is killed, and then we end up with a 20-minute fight sequence, which is great.
Oh, the motorcycle surfing bit.
Motorcycle surfing bit. No. The detective who decided to finally help after her birthday gets shot to death. He goes, leave her. She's dead.
Dead.
We have to ride on this motorcycle. which is actually, we did Die Another Day. No, the World Is Not Enough.
Yeah.
Better motorcycle fight in this movie. What, 2 years before that?
3 years. Six. Before
it? Yeah, because this is 93.
Yeah. Six years before. It's, they nail this. This is a much better fight scene, regardless.
And it ends with everything exploding, which is great.
Like multiple times, too.
Well, because they try and get away with it by showing that the bike was shot, so it's leaking gas.
And they show that he's always careful to reload. I mean, he goes through quite a lot of clips.
Well, and
the convenient thing, we're kind of past the phase of unlimited ammunition, but it's convenient that there are so many henchmen because there are so many dead bodies and so many guns to just...
That's GoldenEye logic right there.
Yeah, exactly. But if there's dead bodies, there's ammunition. Let's keep going.
Hey, but at least they show the logic, right? Because in a Stallone movie, they wouldn't bother. But he's literally picking clips off of people and they keep shooting it like an FPS. It's just like...
Yeah.
And everything has its own sound. Like, the guns practically talk like it's Roger Rabbit, to be blunt. But at this point, the movie is wrapping itself up into a third act because Vosloo kills the medical examiner here.
Well, he kills Poe. The medical examiner was the guy who got shot through the door.
Well, right, but that happens after this scene. At least according to the notes, which may be wrong.
Okay.
I was just jibble-jabbling.
A lot of bullets happen between the first and fourth acts.
The motorcycle death match ends with them jumping onto a moving train and riding it away so that Lance Henderson can't get a shot on
him. Because
as a
homeless man, he has a, like, I smell a train car. And you're just like, ha-ha! And he jumps. And at that
Ladies
point,
first.
And at this point, you remember that the credits said, Wilford Brimley, and we've been... And like Chekhov's gun, we have Chekhov's Uncle Duvet.
Lance Henriksen's gun is the same gun that's used in Hard Boiled by one of the villains, which I was so happy to see.
Which, if you aren't Daniel, is essentially the man with the golden gun, right?
Yeah.
It shoots one bullet at a time. He wears it on a bandolier around his waist, but since it only shoots one at a time, he has like eight magic bullets, which are the size of a shotgun.
It's basically a very high caliber pistol.
Yeah, it looks like one of those things I've seen. You can practice shooting rifle bullets, but it's more like a handgun sized. It's very strange looking.
And if you are... Well, I mean, it's also a Dirty Harry length gun. Like, he pulls it out of his pants like it's a giant erection. It's amazing. And again, it's... You have some actors with square jaws. If you remade this now, it'd be a Michael Shannon character. It's just... It's all cheekbones and evil. And Lance Henriksen looks like a, he's a wax figure, and then by the third act, the fire makes him stronger, but he looks half-melty.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. You don't... It's a John Woo's first American film, and yet, you have the most amazing casting in this.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly,
I don't remember seeing Lance Henriksen out of anything other than maybe the Alien movies. And he's
that's all you need, though.
And he's a lot more impressive in this one as a villain than as Bishop.
He's been in a ton of stuff.
I know that. I don't remember him being in much else that
I've
seen.
Well, he's your utility infielder if you need someone who looks strong, jawed, and turns evil.
Well, he was the voice of the Silverback in the Disney Tarzan movie.
Kerchak?
Yes.
I'm impressed, A, with both of you, and then B, that you know his name, Mr. Quinn. Well done.
They had a kid's version of Tarzan at the book fair. You remember book fairs?
Sure.
I know the book fair. We did that movie on the podcast. I couldn't tell you a damn thing about it. It's the most forgettable Disney film I think we've
seen. So it wasn't in your heart?
Nope. We did not.
And we're back to Phil Collins again, for Christ's sake.
Well, so this is the early 90s.
You'll be in my heart. Sudsy and I have been talking because my daughter right now is obsessed with Frozen. He hates Frozen. Which is
I didn't hate it. I was just disappointed.
Daniel, let it go. Let it go.
I think it's fine, and I cry at about half the song because it's a very, very sad movie.
Mm-hmm.
We can both agree it's better than Tarzan.
Yes. Oh, by far. By far. At the very least, the animation's gorgeous in that movie.
It's gorgeous, and Kristen Bell will always win.
How long can you hold that middle finger up, Daniel?
Quite a while, Matt.
As long as necessary.
I hope you can
see. He's actually been doing this since last Thursday. He's going for the Guinness World Record right now.
Or maybe it's just stuck that way.
I'm doing it as loud as I can.
Let's do a Werner Herzog video.
I hope you can see this.
Flicking him off for the last 4 days.
the bed is the most important and intimate reason to say go fuck yourself.
It is a universal symbol, a symbol that means despair and offense.
I hate that you can do that so easily.
The bad jokes Matt Quinn is making.
I don't even know what you're doing, Matt.
So on the edge of a horizon, you see a man boldly drinking out of a mason jar, like the hipster he was in 1994, a bottle out of what is pure crystal white moonshine.
Oh, let's go over what this man is wearing. He's wearing dirty overalls. He has a great white beard. He's wearing white cowboy boots. And
bright red butt flap induced under, like long johns.
Yes.
The man, and a knit stocking cap that holds holes through it, hiding his bald spot and the jankiest glasses you've ever seen.
And a raincoat for some reason.
We are introduced to a gilded age.
Oh, this
Wilfred Brimley.
This is like the America. This is the Jeffersonian ideal right here.
I love him as a character because he's so crude. He's dressed crude. He's a moonshiner, yet his weapon of choice is an elegant bow. Like, this man doesn't throw sticks of dynamite at his foes like he should.
He uses all his dynamite for other purposes, we'll get to.
Yeah, like,
when the revenuers show up.
Exactly.
Before this happens, the best scene in the movie.
Please.
They're trekking through the swamp trying to find Uncle Duvet.
Oh, the
snake. They come across a snake.
Oh, the snake.
Oh, well, first
they come across a snake when they're about to make out. Like,
yes,
Natasha
thinks. Yeah, and Natasha thinks that's what's going to happen because she's got. She closes her eyes and she's ready. But
she's ready for it.
Yeah, yeah. But Chance sees the snake and he yanks this thing and he literally punches this snake unconscious.
He like backhands it. He gives it a nice little.
He first backhands it and then he's like. Yeah. It's an actual fist.
He takes the snake and he bites its rattle off.
Yep.
So it can't alert other people to its presence.
I understand the purpose. I was just saying it's so dramatic. You know, he just takes like taking a bite of something, like a big carrot. You know.
No. I was going to see what metaphor you came up with.
Like Bugs Bunny. You know,
like crunchy snake bits. You know what biting a rattle of a snake feels like.
I mean, like, this is that slow motion we were talking about in the first act where it just comes up as though it's fatality. Like,
yeah. You know. This isn't even in slow-mo. This is, like, played perfectly straight. I'd imagine that tastes like stale calamari. Am I wrong?
You know what it tastes like? I'll bet 100%. It tastes like the shells of a shrimp. It has no flavor. It's just grisly and crunchy. And he just pulls it out like it's a bloody mess. And you know what? It's the CGI-est puppet of a snake. This is a reject from a Muppet show. It's
awful. This was before CGI, so they didn't even try and cover it. It was just a puppet.
Like a rattlesnake on steroids. It's like huge.
It's just biting into a beehive full of bees.
At this point, Lance Hendrickson shows up with Vosloo and then a bunch of presumably millionaires, billionaires. He goes, now it's $750,000 for the hunt? ?
He somehow is able to get 5 new clients in maybe an hour.
And, well, that's how many rich people want to kill poor people, I guess. That's what the movie's telling us.
This is it, man. All bets are off. They're not covering their tracks. They're leaving New Orleans when they're done with this hunt.
They're already talking about it, and even Arnold Vosloo is like, you know, we're going to be in Mexico in 5 hours because at this point, the entire country is probably looking for them.
And after they kill the autopsy guy, he goes, why don't we just go to Eastern Europe? There are no laws there. And you're like,
yeah,
it's 1994. Like, in Bosnia, you just have a field day.
Have you ever been to Croatia? There's like no one there except for the dude we're going to shoot.
And we can just tan on the beaches and then go back and murder people. Like, darn police strike.
I know. It's ridiculous.
The whole plot is hinged on a police strike.
Can we stir up a coup? There's going to be so many people.
There's a lot of anti-union shit in this, too, isn't it? The police union's on strike, and they're keeping Jean-Claude Van Damme for working. Reagan's America. Moving on. At this point, Dunkel Duvet hears JCVD because he's doing whistles. And I guess to make sure the duvet doesn't shoot him to death, which he does, there's a gun on top of the still. So he's dealt with this before. And then JCVD is wounded, right, because of a motorcycle hijink that we alluded to earlier.
Yeah.
And Duvet's, you know, patching him up, injecting him with God knows what. And he goes, so Duvet, do you have that gun I gave you?
No, get it.
Which is a story in and of himself.
I just love how casual it is. Like, yeah, Gator's going to eat shit out here.
He goes, do you have that 310 I gave you? He goes, no, a Gatorade. You're just like, it was a sunny day on the bayou.
Yeah.
And to, I mean, again, it's told like it's Mr. Toad, you know, Mr. Toad story. And you have Uncle Duvet taking a rest along the old swamp. He's had a couple nips of his white dog. And then
but be careful not to spill it. Kill the grass.
And JCVD's like, now don't take a nap with my gun. And he falls asleep, and the gator just shows up chomping on the gun. First, oh no, my gun. And
insert cliche, I'm sorry,
well,
everyone.
That's only half the story, because, of course, he did keep his shotgun.
I saved your shotgun. And he touches it like it's an old friend. He's rubbing it. He's checking in the barrel. Then he goes, blows the dust off.
How the hell could that thing fire? It is covered in, like, years of dust.
Oh, my gosh. We have been without a slow-mo scene in just a minute.
And I tell you, nothing is quite like a blowing dust off a gun fade. Because that is a fade shot that we cut to the, as I wrote, the Mardi Gras factory.
They queued up that power ballad, and goddamn it
was Pennywise the clown, because the first thing you see is a gigantic clown's head.
Yeah, I mean, well, we should give credit to poor Duvet and his fight against the revenuers, because at this point, JCVD grabs a horse called Elvira and his shotgun filled with a box of shells, rides off into the middle distance. Then Duvet and Yancey, Nat.
Yeah.
Are hiding in the right on the edge of the clearing, waiting for this herd of, I guess, presumably, again, millionaires and thugs to find them. One guy who looks like, as I put down, Brian Regan dressed up as Duke Nukem.
Yep.
That's what he was.
Opens up fire on this. I mean, it's a swamp house. It's on stilts. Tears it to shreds, and then looks in the door. No one's there. And so Duvet fires an arrow, hitting some white dog on the flame of the still, causing an explosion, which then lights a fuse, which then blows up some TNT.
And destroys this little shack that he's got out there.
More dynamite. I mean, by the end of it, a lot of the minions are dead. It's like Home Alone.
It was great.
No,
it was a Moonshiner's Mousetrap. It was
this
amazing.
This is basically Skyfall. This exact scene would be ripped off in Skyfall.
It was.
Yeah. And again, to be blunt, this is why the movie should have started 20 minutes earlier here. Yeah. Right? You could have made the movie effectively Mousetrap, right? Or whatever that
Mad movie, Mouse Hunt?
Mouse Hunt, the Nathan Lane movie.
Oof.
Where the whole thing is them trying to catch the mouse. Catching Uncle Duvet and JCVD for an hour? Like, just sending wave after wave of guys? Well, this is awesome!
Well, this could be the early 90s. You can see all the explosions, the record scratch freeze frame. You're probably wondering how I got here.
Well, let's all start at the beginning. Yeah, that's exactly what this is, man. Well done.
It really would have made a better film, honestly. The hour of context before this point made no difference.
The Duke Nukem guy, I'm assuming, if I recall correctly, that this is the guy who was in that funny scene where he meets Nat coming around the corner, and then he just says, "You stupid bitch," but she's got a gun and just blows him away.
That was Frick and or Frack.
Oh, yes, okay.
Point your titties north.
Point your titties north to his crotch, and then unloads a whole clip into his crotch.
And it's very clearly she points the gun at his balls. And
yeah.
Maybe the actress had never held a gun before, but they kept that shot for a reason. That's amazing.
John Woo knows what he's doing.
An entire clip into his crotch.
Oh, so good. At this point, we get the greatest shot in any movie we've done, which is Wilford Brimley on horse riding away from an explosion
with
a bow and arrow.
Barely able to stay on that horse.
How dare you, sir? He was as natural as the day is long.
Poor
and
horse.
Also, I didn't watch the credits. There's no PETA message on this. That horse riding Wilford Brimley away from an explosion. That horse had a heart attack.
Oh my God.
Poor thing. And then he made it into some etouffee. Like, that man, he needs to be in more things. And it's funny because the only thing I've ever seen him in is that, what is that? Not contact.
The Thing?
Well, we've done The Thing.
Oh, the thing was so good.
Amazing. I always think of him in that, what's that movie where the old people get younger?
Cocoon.
Oh, those diabetes commercials. Yeah.
Growing up having seen Cocoon before I saw The Thing and this, he's an action man. If this was movie set 50 years earlier, he's a fat guy, but in that way that he's the heavy, he's the end boss. And they play him here that way. Now, JCVD in his glorious spin kicks,
This man in denim is so flexible. It's a testament, really. This should have been a Wrangler commercial.
So many broken jaws, so many broken necks. He's really
kneecaps. He kicked people, like you said. He kicked a guy in the knee.
I was a little disappointed, actually, by like
the beginning, the hoodlums who are trying to rob her.
Yeah. Well, that's the first scene. He kicks ass and he kicks face. Like, and that's the whole scene is him doing spin kicks, and then there's an hour of gunplay before
you can arrest all the surviving minions at local dental clinics and physical therapists for all the broken limbs.
You can find their teeth everywhere.
Again, it's Batman Arkham Asylum. Oh, they'll live. You're like, no, no. I will say, though, as much as I like that, it makes me want to do something like Time Cop, just because he still has a gun for a lot of this. And it's not me being like anti-violence. It's just that I want him to finish more people off just with the kicking. And in Time Cop, it's all spin kicks. He very rarely has a gun.
The villains have guns, but he's, all spin kick.
And that's what I mean. They've established him as like a badass that can literally kick people's heads off their shoulders. And then he's got two guns, and it's like awkward with the shotgun for over an hour.
And then the third gun is in his back pocket, and he's just shooting at people. And again, the physicality is great. It's just that, like, Bloodsport, he just punches dudes.
Yep.
And that's what he's good at. You get a martial artist, I don't need gun kata. I just want him to the kata part, right?
Yeah.
Then they ended in a warehouse filled with birds. Sometimes they're pigeons, but when JCVD is going to win, it's the dove.
Yeah.
It's woo.
Is this what it sounds like when the doves cry?
Doves don't cry, they coo.
At this point, everyone is dying out. I mean, this is the shootout at the Mardi Gras factory, as my notes say.
Arnold Vosloo. Well, it's the same shot that they'd use in Face Off, the backs against the wall. Yeah.
I mean, and you're talking about like Tati and the other people, the samurai that Wu grew up with. He also must have loved the Marx Brothers because there's a lot of like the mirror shots and
And so much broken glass and shrapnel. I'm surprised that Lance Henriksen is the only one who's got metal sticking out of him by the time it's done.
And loose change, which is, again, fire can melt steel beams.
Fire can't melt that glorious mullet that JCVD
nothing
had.
Nothing can melt that mullet.
I mean, you know what would be great? If he was Samson and halfway through the hair gets cut, and he's like, no! How errors, they cannot survive!
When they burned the building, the two minions are holding him down, one minion takes like a little lawn shears and just are trying to kind of cut
the scissors off. Make a comeback from the earlier scene.
He takes some Rogaine and goes, I must fix what once was wrong, and then he gains his power back.
There you go.
And that's how you round out the scene.
And then he pulls down the Mardi Gras factory on top of Arnold Vosloo and
and thus sacrifices himself.
And he goes, I must crush. And he goes, and how does it feel to be hunted for the first time? And then he crushes them to death.
That's almost the line that's actually in there where he's like asking Lance Henriksen, how does it feel to be hunted?
And then he goes fully feral. Lance Henriksen. Yeah.
The best scene in this is when Lance Henriksen's jacket catches fire. And instead of acting like he's getting burned, he just gets mad.
Yeah, I mean, so many times in this movie, people catch fire because it's a John Woo movie and everything's made out of Tyndall, like Tinder.
Tyndall.
Everything is made of Tyndall, folks.
Well, escaping. Did you say Tinder? So swipe right for an explosion, swipe left for a gunfight?
No, it's Tyndall. It's what you have to burn to get to the real ones.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling in his bandolier there's 10 bullets or whatever, and he hates to waste them except for when he has to make a kill. And half of these he uses to kill people who are on fire. He's literally shooting them in the back of the skull. I mean, again, which is great, but at this point, he's just like, now I have to use it on someone real, otherwise I don't get the soul that I need to survive.
Yeah,
yeah, it's true.
So Jean-Claude Van Damme kicks his head off when he have the quickening, like in Highlander?
We might as well. I mean, the third act is filled with magic, practically. He does a spin flip over the top of a wall of fire to shoot him in the chest with a shotgun, and then drops a grenade in his pants.
In his pants for dramatic effect.
And he disassembles the grenade, and then when he thinks it's finally safe, when it sparks, and he has a facial expression like, oh, crap, and then boom.
It's an inch too close. I mean, the ending might as well be a Naked Gun or a Hot Shots gag.
Well, one of the things that happens before the ending is somebody catches up to Uncle Duvet and takes one of his arrows and stabs him in the
that's right.
In the chest. So supposedly he's dead.
Even before that, I mean, Daniel's favorite line, he's shot in the leg, and Nat picks him up. He goes, are you okay? Can you walk? He goes, I cannot dance, but I can stand. And you're just like, All right, fine.
One-liners make the pain go away.
It does.
Yeah, dance your drunken ass over there. Let's finish this scene up.
I mean, frankly, it ends with Lance Hendrickson after a kind of a Mexican standoff for 2 seconds. JCVD charges at him like a madman. The shot misses, goes clear. They blow him up with a grenade in the crotch.
I love this scene, though. I really did. It's such a cliche film full of stupid cliches, but they wind up in a factory full of Mardi Gras floats, and it's dark, and it's gritty, and it's cool, and it's just such a departure from the rest of the bullshit. Like, you forget your New Orleans except for the terrible accents.
Yeah.
You know, but this really brings it back, and I think it's a really cool scene.
This is it. Smash cut to the end. Like,
Creedence Clearwater's Born on the Bayou start up, and
that's right.
Yeah, then the credits roll.
Yeah.
And to what Steve was doing, Final Judgment. Steve, would you recommend this movie?
I would. I think it's got some really obvious problems. It's really stupid, and it's really cliche, but it's really fun. And I do think that there are some really good action scenes in here. So yeah, give it a watch. It's 2 hours worth of your time, but like, I think it really does. I don't want to say it holds up, but it's definitely entertaining.
Daniel?
John Woo directed one of my favorite movies of all time, which is The Killer, which if you've not seen that, go watch that now. He got screwed by Hollywood. Massively screwed. Like, it's the closest to what he was doing while he was in Hong Kong, not just in terms of the script, which is, like Steve said, kind of not that great. I mean, it's full of plot holes, then the characters aren't really well fleshed out, but just in terms of the technique that he's using, they actually let him go to town. So in that point, it's very interesting, and at the very least, it's 95 minutes. It's the perfect Sunday afternoon movie.
I thought it was pretty entertaining. I mean, it's a lot of creative gunplay and creative accents. Yeah, so it's worth a watch.
My final thoughts on this, honestly, are that it's perfectly cast and terribly cast at the same time. These actors are great. You want to watch them. And like Matt said, they're doing some of the most creative accents I've ever heard for no reason. And yet, this movie, frankly, it's saved by the fact that JCVD took it to the editing bay and kept it at 90 minutes or so. Because if this was a two-hour movie, there would have been a lot more slow parts. I mean, I can't imagine, because there were parts even here where it slows down and you realize how crap it is.
All the slow-mo and stuff.
Well, and there's talky-talk scenes that, you know, well, like
the entire second act, just throw it away.
There shouldn't be a mystery in this. Like, it should, like, if you want to keep it action-y, that's why I think in many ways JCVD's best movie is Bloodsport, because what do you need? You just want to see him do the martial arts.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and it's stupid to say, like, it's a fighting tournament movie, but that's what he's good at. And yet, keeping this to 94 minutes, kind of, even the boring parts, they're, what, 4 minutes long? I'd recommend this 100 times out of 100. Like, what else are you going to do on a Saturday night other than watch something this stupid? Wilford Brimley shows up, and he's a badass. That fat man riding a horse is fantastic. Anyway, so we're out of time here. In 2 weeks, we're going to come back with our second Hunting Humans for Sport movie, and hell with it. I'll tell you what it's going to be. Rutger Hauer, Charles S. Dutton, and Gary Busey, and John C. McGinley are hunting iced tea for sport in a movie called Surviving the Game.
I've never seen this. Full disclosure, I have never seen it.
Well, when we said hunting humans for sport, I did some research, and I was like, that cast is hunting iced tea? Rutger Hauer is hunting iced tea? This is the answer. Like, what else are we going to do? A classy movie? Hell no. Have you heard the podcast? And in October, remember, we're doing our Heavy Hitters Month. So watch out for voting for number four. We have some good choices for you to choose between. But with that in mind, stay tuned next week and every future week as we put a little bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Finding Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and product of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis, and is produced by Ann Burns, Nick Hoffman, Matthew Quinn, and Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of incomptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.